Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, host of the Football History Dude podcast, right here on the Sports History Network. Now, before we jump into another sports history adventure, let me tell you about this episode's sponsor. We partnered with Rochester Sports Autographs, the largest JSA authenticated autograph distributor in the United States, where you can get deals on over 30,000 autographed sports collectibles. They even have film, music, and other entertainment autographs on the site, so there's something for everyone. Perhaps you're looking for a gift for Mother's Day, or maybe Father's Day. Heck, who needs a holiday as an excuse to give a piece of sports history to your loved ones? Or how about yourself? Today seems like a great day to add to your sports cave, right? But how is RSA able to offer such great deals on JSA authentication, you ask? Well, they do this by making deals directly with athletes, so there are no extra markups, and they choose to pass these savings on to the customer. All orders from Rochester Sports Autographs are top quality and shipped to your door with top authentication and money-back guarantee. And to make sure RSA knows that the Sports History Network sent you, we created a special link for you. All you have to do is head to shoprsa.com/SHN. Again, that's shoprsa.com/SHN. Head over there to get your piece of sports history today.
If you're into good old-fashioned football where you run the ball and play good defense, you're in for a treat today as we cover the football history headlines of October 15th through history, and we've got a lot to cover, and we'll be up with it in just a moment. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're broadcasting from the Pig Pen in Western Pennsylvania, bringing you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So, with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines. Hello, football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and we have got a good one for you today as we go through the football history headlines of October 15th. And we're going to go all the way back to the beginning, nearly the beginning, and we'll go to October 15th, 1884 in New York City. Another football rules convention was held with the one focus to mold the fair catch rules, and the meeting defined the fair catch as a catch made direct from a kick or throw forward, or a knock by any one of the opposing sides, or for a punt. Of course, in our era of football, we are only familiar with a fair catch being used on a kick or a punt. Now we got a special presentation for you straight from the city of brotherly love, one of its favorite sons, John Gidley, a fellow podcast host on the Sports History Network.
Hello, I'm John Gidley, and I'm the host of the Football Attic on the Sports History Network. I want to thank Darren Hayes for allowing me to share this event that took place on today's date in NFL history. October 15th, 1933, the Polo Grounds, New York City. The Philadelphia Eagles played in their very first NFL regular season game, facing the New York Football Giants. The Eagles were formed from the remains of the defunct Frankfurt Yellow Jackets franchise that was sold to a group of Philadelphia-based businessmen. The Pro Football Hall of Fame documentation of the game says that when the Eagles took the field for the first time ever, they were overwhelmed by an overpowering Giants team led by rookie quarterback Harry Newman. The Giants jumped out to an early 21-0 first quarter lead before the starters gave way to replacements. The game didn't get any brighter with the reserves in, as New York shut out Philly 56-0. The Eagles' struggle to get in the win column would be for another two games played against tough opponents in the Green Bay Packers and the Portsmouth Spartans. Finally, in week four of that first season, Philadelphia would play on the opposite end of a shutout, earning the franchise's first victory on Sunday, November 3, 1933, beating the Cincinnati Reds 6-0. In their next game, they tied a tough Chicago Bears squad, then rattled off two more victories over the Pittsburgh Pirates and again over the Reds, before dropping their final two games to the Packers and Giants yet again. Pro Football Reference indicates that the inaugural season of the Eagles was a third-place finish in the NFL's Eastern Division, with a 3-5-1 mark. The 1933 season was won by the Chicago Bears, the team that the Eagles had tied 3-3 earlier in the year, as the Bears knocked off the Giants 23-21 in the NFL Championship game, played on December 7th. The Eagles would go on to win three NFL championships prior to the Super Bowl era in 1948, 49, and 1960. They, of course, won Super Bowl 52 in 2018 in the modern era of the NFL by defeating the New England Patriots 41-33. I'd like to thank Darren Hayes once again for allowing me to share this, and I'd like to encourage all of you to listen to the Football Attic on the Sports History Network and to follow me on Twitter at JFG Sports. Now back to Pigskin Dispatch.
Great job, John, on that Philadelphia Eagles football history headline. Make sure you catch John's show every Friday, The Football Attic. Now let's take a peek back in history at a more modern era. We'll go to October 15th, 1987, and the NFL Players Association orders an end to a 24-day strike that they had. The union failed to achieve the demands in the short term as there was no collective bargaining agreement in place. The owners had used replacement players for a couple of weeks to meet television contract commitments, and it didn't help the NFLPA's cause when star players such as Joe Montana, Mark Gastineau, and Steve Largent started breaking ranks and crossed the picket lines. This eventually led to all of the players returning back to work in week number 7. Our next two football headlines come from the same day, and it was a schedule maker's dream. On October 15th, 1988, the first game was in South Bend, Indiana, and the reigning champion Miami Hurricanes entered into Notre Dame Stadium to face the undefeated Fighting Irish squad. It was a big game with much on the line. Miami came into the contest with a 36-game unbeaten streak and were ranked number one in the nation for good reason, while Notre Dame was ranked fourth in the polls. Tensions were high, as this became very evident when there was a pregame fight in front of the entrance tunnels. The game was a tight one most of the day, much to the delight of everyone watching. The hype of this game, deemed colloquially as the Catholics versus the Convicts, was living up to every ounce of the buildup. With 45 seconds left to play, the Hurricanes scored a touchdown to make the score 30-31 in favor of the Irish. Hurricane head coach Jimmy Johnson had a decision to make: kick the extra point and hopefully go into overtime, or go for two and go for the jugular in regulation. Jimmy Johnson chose the latter and elected to go for the win in regulation, and the Irish defender Pat Terrell batted down the Hurricane pass from quarterback Steve Walsh to preserve the Notre Dame one-point lead and led the Irish to victory. But that same day, October 15, 1988, across the country, there was another big game, Memorial Stadium in Lincoln, Nebraska. A second pretty awesome matchup as college football that same day, as the number 7 Nebraska Huskers would entertain the number 10 Oklahoma State in a Big 8 conference showdown. The Huskers came out putting it on the heat as they grabbed every opportunity they had to jump out to a 42-0 lead early in the second quarter over their rivals. The Cowboys suddenly awoke from their nightmare that they were in, and they rattled off 21 points of their own in the second quarter, but found themselves down 49-21 at the half. The most amazing part of this contest was that most of the yardage was not through the air, as one might expect in such a high-scoring game, but according to HuskerMax.com's story, there was a lot on the ground. There was a grand total of 349 total yards passing in the game for the two teams combined, and the combined rushing yard was an NCAA record of 778 for the game. Nebraska running back Ken Clark ran the ball for 256 yards on 27 attempts to lead the Huskers, while Oklahoma State University Cowboys star Barry Sanders paced his team with 35 rushes for 189 yards and led to the final score, Nebraska 63, Oklahoma State 42. We fast forward into the next decade. October 15th, 1995, we go to the NFL and Clemson's Memorial Stadium in Clemson, South Carolina. The Carolina Panthers win their first game ever, beating the New York Jets 26-15. According to Panthers.com, the Jets were up 12-6 with 22 seconds to go before halftime. Then, New York quarterback Bubby Brister dropped back the pass and threw a shovel pass forward where he thought his awaiting running back would be. Instead, Panthers linebacker Sam Mills stood in the way and was able to accept the gift and weaved, rumbled, and tumbled 36 yards for an unexpected Panther TD before the half ended, putting the Carolina team in their inaugural season up 13-12 at the half. It was a turning point in the game and the season for the young team, as not only they won that game, but they won their next 3 games as well, and 7 of their last 11 to finish the season with a record of 7-9, the best for any expansion team in NFL history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, to not only see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskin Dispatch is in the social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Pigskin Dispatch is also happy to be associated with the Sports History Network, the sports headquarters of yesteryear, found at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
Now it's birthday celebrating time for our Hall of Famers, and we'll go to October 15th, 1886, and that's the day when the birth of Jonas Ingram occurred. Jonas Ingram won the Medal of Honor in 1914 in a Mexican Revolution battle, fought in World War I with the U.S. Navy, and during World War II, he not only fought in the Navy, but he also was an admiral that commanded the entire U.S. Atlantic Fleet. Before the wars, though, Jonas Ingram was a football player, and a good one at that. He was a fullback and linebacker that played for the U.S. Naval Academy. He was often called the one-armed admiral, as he often said, "I'd give my right arm to win this ballgame," to his teammates, and he was a fierce competitor, and according to his bio on footballfoundation.org, his efforts in the Army game in 1906 led to the Navy win. After his playing days, he returned to the Academy to coach the midshipmen for three seasons. The National Football Foundation selected Jonas Ingram to enter into their College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1968. Next, we go to October 15th, 1892, in Quincy, Massachusetts. That's where Huntington Tack Hardwick was born. Huntington was a halfback and defensive end for Harvard University during a span where the team reeled off 33 straight victories between 1911 and 1915, according to the National Football Foundation's website. Tack entered the Harvard fray in 1912 and had an instant impact as he ran for a 60-yard touchdown to defeat Princeton for the first time in 25 seasons for Harvard. He later in the Yale game tackled a runner with such a powerful hit that he jarred the ball loose and led to a Harvard score, sealing their undefeated season. As a matter of fact, Tack Hardwick never played on a college team that lost, as the Harvard Crimson football team was 25 wins, 0 losses, and 2 ties with Tack in the lineup. Tack Hardwick was ushered into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1954. Our next stop on the timeline is October 15th, 1917, in Glen Ellyn, Illinois. Bob McLeod was born there, and Bob was a former halfback of Dartmouth University that played from 1936 through the 1938 season. He was the main offensive weapon for Dartmouth as they won 21 of 27 games that he played in. Most opposing teams came into the games against Dartmouth with the objective to stop McLeod, but they still had trouble doing so as he averaged over 6 yards per carry in his 3-year college career. The National Football Foundation selected Bob McLeod to enter into their College Football Hall of Fame in 1977. After college, Bob played with the Chicago Bears for a couple seasons before joining the U.S. Marines to fight in World War II. After the war, he was a business leader in the magazine industry. Flip the calendar pages forward and we go to October 15, 1931, and Don Mumaw, the former center and linebacker from UCLA, was born. After his football career was over, Mumaw was a Presbyterian minister. His earlier years in the UCLA football program, though, he terrorized opposing quarterbacks as he coveted the ball that they possessed, and he intercepted 11 passes in his career. He also sought out and tackled opposing ball carriers in their tracks with his low-hitting signature tackles. In 1952, he was the Associated Press Lineman of the Year as he led the Bruins to an 8-1 record. After college, he played in the CFL and had a great career there. Don Mumaw was ushered into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1973. Our final stop on the Hall of Fame birthday trail for October 15th happened in 1942, and it belongs to Milt Morin. Milt Morin was a tight end from the University of Massachusetts during the seasons of 1963 to 1965. Milt helped the University of Massachusetts Minutemen team in 1963 to its only undefeated season and earned the right to play in a Tangerine Bowl in early 1964. Morin finished his college career with a stout 1,151 yards receiving and earned 7 varsity letters combined in the sports of football, lacrosse, and wrestling. The powers that be voted Milt Morin into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 2010. And after college, Milt kept his football playing days going as he played for the pros for the Cleveland Browns.
In the big league, he was a two-time Pro Bowl player, and when he retired, he was in the top 10 players in Browns history in career receiving yards with 4,208. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, this is Joe Ziemba, the host of When Football Was Football, here on the Sports History Network. I'm very pleased to announce that I will be partnering with the Sports History Network to give away two copies of my latest book called Bears vs. Cardinals, the NFL's Oldest Rivalry. To enter, just head over to the following link, sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. We hope you'll enjoy the numerous stories in the book, which is largely based on the newly released Dutch Sternemann collection at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Dutch was the co-owner of the early Chicago Bears with George Halas and kept correspondence, financial records, and scouting reports, which now allow us to peek into the management of an NFL club during the first few years of the league's existence. Along the way, we'll meet unusual gridiron characters from years gone by, including a quarterback who could throw the ball farther behind his back than he could throwing it forward, a Bears lineman who was such a good tavern fighter that he decided to enter the boxing universe, and a Cardinals halfback who gave up the NFL rushing title by deciding to not show up for his team's final game of the season. And can we forget the time the Al Capone mob interrupted a Bears-Cardinals game? The new book was fun to research, and I hope you'll enter our free contest today. Once the winners are selected, we'll be in touch regarding shipping as well as to inscribe the book personally for you. This might make a perfect gift for Mother's or Father's Day, or simply add it to your own personal collection. Once again, enter by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. Thank you, and good luck!